It's Tracy Tully, and you're listening to Tracy Tully Talks at bbsradio.com, the place to be right now, streaming live with another 60 minutes of thought-provoking topics, sharing with you conversations that are relevant today, tomorrow, and in the future. Join me each week on Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, 5 p.m. Wednesday PT, hello Los Angeles. If you missed the live show, jump onto your favorite podcasting platform and you'll find me on Tracy Tully Talks. We do have some adult language, so if you have some little ones around, pop on your earphones. Hello and welcome to Tracy Tully Talks today here in Australia and also overseas, wherever you are. And welcome, California. Hello, Tony Lontis. Welcome again to Tracy Tully Talks. And what's the weather like in sunny Queensland at the Gold Coast?
It's beautiful today. A bit windy, though. We've had some really brisk wind. Other than that, it's good. Hubby's actually just gone for a paddle in the ocean.
Excellent. Oh, lucky. So for our listeners here in Australia, we've just started spring, and so it's been a bit of a cold, wet, which has been wonderful for us, and very windy end of the winter. But now we start heading into our summer, so spring's here. And it's usually very short-lived here. We usually have only a little short time spring, and it goes boom, straight into summer. Tony, today we're talking about, yes, and the heat, lots of heat going there. Today we're talking about resilience, and coupled with resilience is fear. And we know that it's very difficult for some people to beat fear. And I always liken my journey and the journey of others to a road trip. And I always tell my clients, don't allow fear to jump in the vehicle with you. Kick it out and throw it in the boot. Tell me, what's your philosophy about fear? What are your thoughts?
So I guess my favorite saying is feel the fear and do it anyway, because fear is actually just a feeling. It's not something that's real and quantitative. It's just a feeling, and a feeling can't hurt you, kill you, maim you, or anything. So if you just acknowledge, okay, I'm feeling petrified, or I'm scared, or whatever words resonate with you, and just feel it, know that it's there, and then do. Like, the action of doing is something very powerful, and it relates back to our subject for today, resilience. And part of developing resilience is learning how to manage what is fear. And I know I've talked to you about this before, but when I first started doing live radio, I actually felt physically ill for the first 6 months every single time I got in front of that microphone. And that's just fear. Fear of what people are going to think. Fear of who the hell do I think I am, that old Australian nugget and tall poppy syndrome. Mm. And the more I did it, the less the fear became, and the better it is. Now, that's not saying I don't feel fear now. I still do, but it has no power over me whatsoever.
That's really good to hear. And one of the big things with fear is that if we let it inside the vehicle with us, we won't release the handbrake. And this is about accepting.
Correct.
Yeah. Accepting change is a big thing, isn't it? And I know that in my career, in education, 38 years in education, a lot of staff, and a very, very high number of staff, are reluctant to change, and they feel fear when new changes come on board. And it's all about really self-awareness, isn't it? Our beliefs and our assumptions are essential to our well-being. And for self-awareness, we need to be able to gain our confidence. And we have today a guest coming on very shortly, Yogita Ridgely, and that's one of her areas that she talks about. But while I'm waiting to bring Yogita on, if we can have a clear insight into our strengths and our weaknesses and our personality and our emotions, we're starting to get on the road there to discovering ourselves. We've talked over the last couple of sessions on Tracy Tully Talks about at self-awareness, and you mentioned to me earlier that when you turned 40, that was a big pivot time for you, a big watershed time in your life, where you discovered that self-awareness and confidence. So you stepped out of the fear, didn't you?
Yeah. So much fear around the unknown, fear and shame. I often liken that fear is linked to shame in many cases, and for me it was intrinsically linked together. But the other thing is that fear is a leftover from our primitive minds, and it was there to stop us from being hurt. And in this modern age and day, we don't necessarily need it as much as we used to. And again, it's about recognizing it's just a feeling. It's not an actual presence in most cases. It's not an actual physical something's going to hurt or maim you. It's just a feeling. And to acknowledge it and go, this is not going to kill me. I'm going to do it anyway. And off you go.
It's a good one, isn't it?
And the action makes it better. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, and so if you've experienced failure and you've experienced discouragement, then you really are on the right track, aren't you, to finding your self-awareness and growing your resilience in life. And we learn from our mistakes, but we also learn from our successes. And it's so easy for people to concentrate on their mistakes and not see and bring to mind all the time their successes. And that's a big part of building your resilience, isn't it?
It is, definitely. Because we are human, and by the fact that we are human, we're going to make mistakes. And, you know, that's part and parcel of being human. And I think that the more of us that show up and allow ourselves to be imperfect humans, the more common it will become, and we'll start to lose the perfectionist ideas that pervade our society at the moment.
That's right. And that perfectionism really comes from, I believe, from the institutionalization of schools. And it comes back to the schooling system, where we have our assessment and we have the report card, and the report card gives you know, an A to whatever, A to E usually. What it does is it sets kids up to for comparison. So they compare themselves with others instead of focusing on their achievement, their success, and where they can do better. And that's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah, I think so.
We should be encouraging people, and in particular children, that they are unique, and that no one, they shouldn't compare themselves to anyone, because there's only one of them.
That's right. That's really correct. And there's only one of these very special people who are our guests, and there's only one guest coming in today, and she's waiting in the wings there. And I'd like to introduce Yogita Ridgely to our listeners today. And Yogita is a very successful businesswoman, CEO and founder of Traveling With Me, Myself and I, which offers personal and business development services. And Yogita wears a few different hats. Hello, Yogita, how are you?
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Tracy. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm super excited to share my story with you. And I have been listening to your beautiful insights on awareness and fear. And that is literally the ingredients that I discuss in my book. So super excited to be here. Thank you.
That's right. So I was just introducing you to our listeners, and I'll just quickly explain that Yogita wears a few different hats. So she's a solo travel specialist. a mindset strategist, an award-winning international speaker, author, and blogger with over a decade of solo traveling experience. And Yogita was featured by one of the Australian magazines as a female change maker, finalist of an Innovative Business Awards. She's also an advocate for mental health and well-being and dyslexia awareness. So Yogita, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Wow, you pretty much covered everything for me, Tracy. So those are the hats I wear, and that is the job I do, so to speak. But the core value of who I am and what I'm here for is literally to learn, grow, and to serve. So that's where I have now got to. From sharing my story, it helped me learn and grow. And from the next level from that growth was now to be able to go out there and empower everyone else that might be struggling with their limitations, so to speak. So that's me in a nutshell.
Lovely. And we see the banner behind you, which is your book, Finding Me, Myself and I, A Journey to Loving Your Authentic Self. And there's a lot of great information in Yogita's book here. And I purchased it before, actually you gifted it to me, didn't you? Before I left to go to Egypt, and I read it on the plane, and I was really intrigued with this fabulous little book and all the information in it. And the reason I was intrigued is because I was going to what's considered a difficult country in the world to travel to as a solo female traveler. And so the advice in this book was paramount for me. It was really good. So Yogita's mission is to get every woman to play the role of me without mask or pretense. So that's really good, isn't it? You don't want people to have the imposter syndrome saying, I'm fine, everything's right.
Yeah, absolutely. It goes a little bit deeper though, Tracy. What happens as a child? Normally we identify ourselves from what our parents tell us. So say, for example, if your mom always encouraged you and said you were an amazing dancer, you identify yourself as a very early age that you are very good at dancing. And then you get a bit older, you start school, and then your teacher might say you're amazing at drawing, and then you identify yourself with that. So all our lives we identify ourselves from what other people tell us, and then you get to a place where you actually haven't really had time or the tools to really learn how to actually really know your identity, who you really are, what your strengths are, and what your weaknesses are. And all of us do have a gift, one gift that makes us a lot more unique from the other person. So what happens, the deeper meaning of taking the mask off is stop identifying yourself by what other people have told you, and find your true self, find your authentic self. And then you will see the difference between the two. Like I lived most of my life being identified by what other people told me. And for me, it wasn't so positive, so to speak, during school years because of my dyslexia. But my family life, when I was a little girl before school, it was an amazing life because my parents really embraced me for being different. So I didn't really know I was different, so to speak. I thought this is what every child looks like and does. And, this is how everyone else is. So when I started school, and because of my dyslexia, when I look at books or letters or anything to do with reading, writing, I just see a whole lot of numbers flying around. Alphabets flying around. And I thought everybody saw the same thing. How was I supposed to know that it was different? So as you grow older, you start to identify yourself with these different things. And I identified with a lot of very negative things. And then I got to a place where I had to take a long deep breath and step aside and look from almost from outside into my own life. And that was the start of my personal development journey to, and also the start of my solo travel journey. And they went hand in hand. Like, my business is called Traveling With Me, Myself and I. The reason for that is you're traveling within you and you're traveling on the outside of you. So there is like a double dip of the meaning, so to speak. And that's, again, the dyslexia mind does that automatically. While we struggle with not being able to read and write and spell to save ourselves, we are able to create things that nobody else can think about, so to speak. So the taking the mask off was extremely raw and very vulnerable, and like they did when I was younger. People will say, oh, look, she can't read, she can't write, she can't spell. All those things were surfacing on the surface. And then I had this whole thing where I would have the replay of my teacher saying she won't amount to anything. You know, she's so stupid, she's so lazy, she can't read. And these things, they just create these limitations. So when I took my mask off, it took me a while. It wasn't overnight. So it was a process that happened. And the most powerful thing that I had within me that I didn't know was resilience, kept on pushing and pushing and pushing. I wasn't going to give up, doesn't matter what, because I had found something that I now valued and identified myself that I am all this, not what everybody else told me. So that's the, you know, the deeper meaning of, you know, not being fake, so to speak. Yeah.
It's interesting, very interesting point that you mentioned there. And for our listeners, I wonder how many people have experienced the same that Yogita's talking about. And one of the biggest things, I think a couple of episodes ago, Tony, we were talking about speaking. And I said that everyone can unlock their voice. Everyone can actually sing. And the voice that we grow up with isn't necessarily our real voice, because we imitate everything we hear when we're young. And exactly like you said, you absorb like a sponge all the comments that you're told. Just prior to you coming on, Tony and I were talking about self-awareness, and I was talking about students' assessment cards, so the report card in Australia. I'm not sure what it's called over in America or overseas, but the, you know, the report card comes home a couple of times a year, and too often not, it's got nothing on it other than a cut and paste sentence on it about the students. So that's what they identify with. And if a student keeps seeing a negative report card come home year in, year out, they actually believe that that's what they are. And that is the problem. And that's what I'm hearing you say, that with your dyslexia, you absorbed the feelings and the reactions and behaviours of people trying to understand, and not having that ability to understand dyslexia. With dyslexia, what sort of suggestions would you provide that schools could do to help students with dyslexia?
The first thing is, if any child is struggling with reading, writing, and spelling, spelling is the main thing. Spelling is the key sign that we are struggling, mm-hmm. And it is dyslexia, because it doesn't matter how much, like, I have a photographic memory, and you would think that if you have that memory, you should be able to memorize the spelling words, like the, you know, the words, which is what we end up doing. We end up actually literally memorizing them because we can't spell them by sounding it out. So with schools, the first thing is the child needs support at home, because at home the parents will pick this up way before the kid will actually start school. So getting the diagnosis done early is really the key. And then when your child, if you haven't been able to diagnose and they're struggling at school, diagnose them there. And then the teachers, you know, to be able to, it's not just dyslexia, pretty much any challenge that a child has at school, the teachers should be able to embrace their strengths and not so much concentrate on their weaknesses, because the ones who are able to read, write, and spell perfectly, they're normally the ones who follow the norm. They follow the crowd. They follow the ones who don't. They're normally the ones who stand out, and normally the ones who actually have quite a lot of, innovative ideas. They're quite a lot of leadership skills in them, and they're quite a lot of public speaking, because they can't read write. They're able to speak well. They're able to tell stories. They're like really good at storytelling or at comedy, because that's one of the other ways that we actually mask our what we call weaknesses. That, you know, we are funny people. Like, we are funny at school. We love to be the funny at parties and so forth. So when you're at school, and I hear this again and again now as an adult, that teachers say there are too many different kids in the class. How am I able to look after them all? But with the day and age we live in and the technology we have and everything else, school system hasn't changed. It hasn't changed to embrace the growth and the development in everything. So my advice for any parents that has got kids who are struggling is take on the role on yourself to help your child, and then help the school understand your child's needs. Because what's happening is the children at school are just getting stuck in this system, and then they get to a place where they end up really hating the education system, because one, they feel like they're not as good as everybody else in there, because they are, like you said, they are actually evaluated by the report card, and their value is just that piece of paper saying C for English and C for whatever spelling. And it doesn't matter if they might get A for math and A for science. That's what kind of like I was getting, but that C stands out more, because we kind of like concentrate on everything that's wrong with us instead of everything that's right with us. Mm-hmm. So this is where the school can actually embrace that that difference, and really help the kids to concentrate more on their strengths, and then keep on managing their weaknesses. So, if somebody said to me, hey, look, don't try to sound it out, just memorize it, because you have the skill to memorize things, just memorize it. So I would have been so much better off, but then I was trying to learn to sound it out like the teacher taught us. She said, this is the only way you will learn how to spell, sound it out. But the sounds just go all over the place in my head. They make no sense. So, yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, my 38-year career in education, it was an area that everyone struggled with, an area that no one had any training at uni with. And of course, everyone's labelled. So students with learning difficulties, SLD, they're labelled. And from the moment they're labelled, the sad part is that that's a stigma that sticks with them for life, because they've been labelled, and they'll go to this room for this course, or they'll go to this teacher aid for this work. And that things really need to change around that. The labelling doesn't need to occur, because every single student needs an education plan that it's adapted for their uniqueness. And that's what Tony and I were talking about earlier before you arrived, that every single person's unique. So every single person's got something different happening to them. And as teachers, we can do that. We can actually very, very easily adapt how we teach and work in a classroom, because we don't have a lot of kids in our classrooms, really. They're relatively small numbers. But as a system and as an organisation, we do need to do something about that. Now, I should probably get smacked for saying that, because some classes are way too big and shouldn't be, but they are because of staffing. So I'm just intrigued about your book. And obviously, you and I have had a lot of conversations about your book. On page 93, for our listeners, Yogita talks about, self-awareness and the thought processes around that. And she said that she started on a journey where she had to go back to start and rewire her brain, and it took her a while to realize her own worth. And this was a big journey for you. Toni earlier talked to us about the same thing when she hit 40. Tell us about that journey to rewire your brain and how you did that.
That is an amazing question to go back to the very beginning. I kept on trying to improve myself to fit in. And I tried to keep on doing self-help books, self-help courses and so forth and so forth. Till I got to a place where I actually watched a movie. And in the movie, it is a Bollywood movie, so to speak. So in the movie, it literally was like one of those light bulb moments. And then I started to seek out someone that could be my teacher, like my guidance or my mentor or my guru, so to speak. So I found this amazing, amazing place that in India. And basically, this guy literally said, to rewire, you have to delete everything that you already know. And you have to start from a clean slate. You cannot, and I repeat, you cannot fill the cup that's already full. There's no space for anything new in that. So if it is full of all your negativity, if it's full of all your limitations, all your fear and all your, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm dumb, all those things that echoes in your head through your childhood and, school life and so forth, the cup is already full. So what I had to do, and this made so much sense, the second he said it, it just went like, yes, that's what I have to do. But to delete, like there's no simple button, like on the computer, you just hit delete and the thing's gone. Our mind is actually a very complicated and an amazing tool. So I needed to learn how to use it to delete first and then rewire everything. And the rewiring then was to serve me and to serve me for the better of why I'm here, what is my purpose, what am I supposed to be doing, what is it that I can do to keep growing and keep serving everybody else in the world. So it wasn't just about me. It was about doing good and that. Going back to my roots. And as you know, in the book, I talk a lot more about going back to my roots and connecting with, why I was born with dyslexia, why I was born in an Indian family, and why do I look like this, and why do I have all these beliefs and all these values and so forth. So yeah, so the journey was very interesting, and I'm so glad that I took that first step. Without that first step, I would have been still sitting on the fence and still blaming the world for everything that was not going right in my life. So literally it is really hard to explain in words because it's very emotional, but I gave it my best shot to do it on my book. So yeah.
Fabulous book, and I highly recommend Yogita's book. And I read that on the plane heading over to Egypt, and I just kept referring to it the whole time I was in Egypt for 2 weeks, traveling around, speaking to business people, and plus some sightseeing, etc., and negotiating alliances with business. And it kept resonating with me, this book, because it kept taking me back to exactly what you're saying. Have you lost yourself a little bit? And if you feel that you might have lost yourself, which a lot of us do, especially women, because we are people pleasers and we always please everyone else before we please ourselves. And so, that process of solo travel is very, very cathartic. And Toni, I know, would agree with me too. It really does help soothe that fear, doesn't it? And I notice on your suitcase behind you, the suitcase stickers there, you've fear is one of the words on the sticker there. So it's about finding the brand new you. I wonder, Yogita, if you can tell us a little bit about your Best solo travel experience. And yeah.
Sorry, I missed the last bit of your question. I don't really know exactly what happened with my internet. Yeah.
That's all right. It just froze. And we've all having that problem, I'm sure, everywhere in the world. Can you tell me a little bit about the most enjoyable solo travel experience that helped you really find yourself?
Yeah, so solo travel experience, like I meet quite a lot of women through my work who come to me and say, hey, I want to go on a solo travel experience or do a solo travel journey. And when I first started, it was literally just going somewhere and doing things like sightseeing, like you're on a holiday, but you're alone. With that process, it came to a space where people normally, when they are solo traveling, they need company. So they start to really make friends with other people, which is amazing, don't take me wrong, but it defeats the purpose of why you are alone. So what I started to do, and this was the most joyful moment for me, was literally go, and I did Europe because I love Europe. Europe is one of my favorite places to visit. Mm-hmm. And I just went with just a flight there and back, and a booking for a accommodation to when I arrived, so to speak, and the rest was open. So just go with where my heart takes you. And I talk a little bit about it in my book. And so I arrived in Paris and literally all by myself. So there's no support person. There's no groups I'm going to meet. There is no friends I'm going to meet. There's like the whole rule was don't make friends on this journey. You are going to make friend with yourself. Like, really are going to, now this is going to really step out of your comfort zone, you know? So I did, and I made quite a lot of mess of things, you know, taking wrong trains and paying wrong bill and getting on the wrong cabin. And I literally got on the first class cabin on a economy class ticket. And the guy who was checking, he just shook his head and he just went like, oh my God, you know, in his French. Like I could understand a little bit of French, but I couldn't speak that well at the time. So I just went like, I'm so sorry. I don't even have any more money to upgrade, you know. And he's just like, okay, just go. Like he was just shaking his head, like just go, just leave. But those are the moments that just started to now feel like, oh, I can make mistakes and it's okay. You know, you can be yelled by people and it's okay. It is, you know, it is life. This is highs and lows of everything. You know, not finding accommodation the way I would have liked it because I didn't plan ahead for that reason. How am I going to react when I'm thrown in this place and in this space and in this situation? So when I arrived there, at least I knew that, you know, there would be somewhere I could stay, but I didn't know that there was a festival on. So I got there, everything was booked out. And this poor lady in her really bad English and me in her really, my really bad French, we tried to figure out how to solve the problem. And by the time I got to the hotel dragging my really heavy suitcase, that's why I always said, don't pack so heavy, because this is from my own experience. You know, training, you know, carrying it down the stairs to the train station, up the stairs and so forth and so forth. So that was literally me, myself learning how to be me and how to love me. And how I would react to situations that are not already mapped out. So the reason for that is, you know, we all talk about goal setting and making plans and making, you know, future. Everything is mapped out. And we have been taught this ever since we're young. The idea of that is amazing. But the truth is, whatever is going to happen is going to happen. Doesn't matter what your plans are. And perfect example right now with COVID. So many things are now unplanned and you have to find that flexibility. You have to find that space where you are going to have to come up with different ideas because the universe has a different idea for you, whether you like it or not, it does. So my learnings were that journey, from that journey, so to speak, is now have a plan, like you have a goal, like I have lots of goals, but those goals are not set in how I'm going to get there. I might take a straight road, I might take a detour, I might take, you know, whichever way I get there, as long as I'm getting towards my goal, I'm very happy with it. So yeah, so that was like, you know, a moment in time that I'm so glad I did it. When I was leaving everyone off, my family, my sisters, my daughters, they all just said, are you all right? Like, have you just lost it? you don't really know what you're going to do after 3 days in Paris. That's all the accommodation I booked. I says, yeah, no, I'll let you know where I am. Don't worry about me, you know. But yeah, that is literally you just being you. And we, like Tracy said, we don't allow ourselves to have that space. We, as mothers, as wives, as, you know, as daughters, as friends, we take care of everybody else, but we don't take care of ourselves. And when we throw ourselves in this solo travel space where you actually have got quite, don't do this unless and until you have quite a lot of experience. So please don't say, you just said go do this and you get yourself into trouble. You do need a lot more guidance before you can go and do this. So I would have been traveling alone with groups and people I know in places, so to speak, for a good 3 years before I did that. So yeah.
That's great. And you're the person to go to. Now, you have a great clarity checklist that I read in your book, and it helps you to create understanding about your self-awareness, and you can really activate your dreams through that. Would you mind sharing that with our listeners today, your clarity checklist?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's 5 points, so to speak. This is literally what I live by. This is like my mantra to myself. I have to, I do this every year. So I go through the whole process of who is in my life that is adding value to me and who is in my life that is toxic. So one of the very first things in my list is, number one, remove all the negative people or the toxic people from your life. And it's extremely important. Doesn't matter what happens in today's society, is people keep having these toxic people thinking that these people will, you know, give them opportunities, especially in business sense, you know, give them more exposure and this and that and the other. But at the end of the day, you know, these people are only there to look after themselves. They're not going to do anything for you. All you have to do is things for yourself. So toxic people have to go. It is extremely important. Number two is let go of everything that you make excuses for. So, you know, like, I can't do this because a lot of women I talk to, they say, oh, I can't go on solo travel till, or any travel, so to speak, or I can't do videos or lives or so forth and so forth till I lose 10 kgs. It's like, why is your identity identified with how many kgs you are? Or till I get a haircut, or till I, you know, till I lose that pimple, or till I get that much money, or there's always an excuse. So lose the excuse. If you really want to progress and grow and learn, you have to stop making excuses, because excuses are holding you back. And number three is anxiety. So anxiety is the fear of future. And this is what I was trying to tell in my story before, when I went on to do this tour or trip, so to speak, without planning. If you learn how to embrace tomorrow for whatever it throws at you, it doesn't matter, you are going to be absolutely fine. But if you are training your mind to constantly plan everything that's going to happen tomorrow, you're always going to struggle with anxiety. And anxiety is literally as worse as fear. So it is fear. It is the fear of future. What's going to happen next? Fear of uncertainty, fear of anything that's unpredictable. So, you know, COVID is really testing everybody's anxiety right now. And, you know, I got tested for this when I was very, very young. What's going to happen tomorrow? I had refused to go into the English class. I didn't know what's going to happen next. So, that was ingrained in me. So I had to really delete that and start new. So now what I preach, and anybody who would hear me, I keep on saying this, just let go of anxiety. Don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow hasn't even come yet. And you're ruining your today because you're so worried about tomorrow. And number four, I talk about this, every woman will relate to. Stop pleasing people. Just stop. Everybody that is going to like you already likes you. And everybody that's going to hate you, they already hate you. It doesn't matter what you do. You're not going to impress everybody. And then you will have a whole lot of people who will just be jealous, a whole lot of people who will just be competing with you. It doesn't matter. All you need to know is that you are pleasing yourself, and that's it. And this is, again, I repeat, with my, you know, coaching classes and my retreats, pleasing yourself doesn't mean you're selfish. It has to come from a very unselfish place. I do meet quite a lot of women who become very selfish. And again, that is a different level of limitations, a very lower self-esteem when they become very selfish. But again, there's a conversation for another day. So the last one is negative self-talk. And I have not met one person who doesn't have a negative self-talk. This really is a big problem, especially for women. It is also, you know, men, children, but especially for women, because when you don't know your worth, you are constantly going to have negative self-talk. And again, when your value is depending on other people's opinion, you're going to have negative self-talk. And the only way you can stop this negative self-talk is really start to know your value, know your worth, and not have other people's opinion change it. So that is not going to happen overnight. It didn't happen overnight for me, but it definitely is achievable. Like right now, when I talk to my clients, I say exactly what I think, and not because I want to be rude, but because I really want to help them. And that was what was done for me. So when people start to be frank with you, that is your testing. You know, like you can always say beautiful things about people, but not mean a thing. And that is worse than saying something nasty to your face, because you can then go and deal with it. So, yeah, so when we stop negative self-talk, that's when the whole thing unfolds. We start to really listen to what we're capable of, start to really know your strengths. And your weaknesses are not the end of the world. They're only there for you to keep working on. Like my dyslexia is not something that you can take a tablet and it will go away. It will never go away. I will never be able to spell, doesn't matter what. And I tell all my clients when I work with them is that if I am writing something, don't worry about spelling. You have to respell the word and then use it. But and they laugh with me instead of at me. So that this is the beauty of now educating people how to deal with you and how to work with you, because you have a weakness. And I know majority of us can now hire people to do things for them as well. So those are my five tips from the book, and I hope it helps.
That's really good. And those tips are brilliant. So if anyone's after that book, Yogita's book is on Amazon, Finding Me, Myself and I, A Journey to Loving Your Authentic Self. Or you can find her on www.travelingwithmemyselfandi.com. And you'll pop onto Yogita's website and have a look around. But it's really interesting, because we were talking about the imposter syndrome earlier when you came in. And some years ago, I went and studied hairdressing so I could teach it in schools, because we had this issue with plenty of vocational education subjects for males, boys, and we didn't have a big variety for girls. and it became an issue. And the girls came to me and said, can we please do beauty and hair? And I said, why not? And, of course, my department went, oh, they had a pink fit. Why, I don't know. Still to this day, I wouldn't have a clue other than it was probably just too hard, poor things. But nonetheless, it was that something I learnt in that group. One of the teachers said to me, or said to the whole class, you're finishing the end of this year. So when you go out there, just fake it till you make it. And we all burst into laughter because that's exactly all you can do, isn't it? All you can do in life is fake it until you make it and have a go. But don't pretend to be okay when you're not okay. We won't do that imposter syndrome because that gives us a no confidence. But what does give us confidence, if you say, I can have a go at this, and you're not afraid to make a mistake and you're not afraid to say, oh, sorry, you know, I shouldn't have done that, etc. So thank you so much, Agita, for coming today. It's been wonderful having you on board, and a really interesting book that Agita talks about as a woman trapped between two cultures. And if you want to read that book, that's a fabulous story, regardless of who you are. But if you're traveling and you want to travel alone on your own, when the borders open up and the planes get going, this might be a lovely gift to a friend who's traveling or a child who's about to launch into the big world. So thank you, Agita. Stay with us while we continue, if you wouldn't mind, because I'm just going to talk a little bit more about the resilience and feeling fear is not always a bad thing, as we've heard from Tony today, and we've heard from yourself, because it forces us to appreciate who we are and what we've done. And also it forces us to appreciate different experiences and trying to understand different situations. And that's challenging us, and therefore that's accepting change. And the more that we live like that, the greater we build our resilience, so we can actually build it. And in my book, I've just got a little quote I'd like to read to our listeners. And it goes like this: each time you feel fear, you become more skilled at understanding a deeper level of yourself. You have insight into your immediate reactions to unknown situations. When your mind is confident, fear will diminish. And it is then that you will discover the power of self-awareness. And for me, I summed up a whole chapter with that quote in my book, Fearless. And it serves me well today, because I went through a period of about a decade when I didn't have any self-confidence at all. So, yeah, I'm just going to have a quick chat here. Sorry, to TJ. So I'm just going to keep going there again, but please stay with us. So with resilience, it's like a step up, isn't it? It's step by step, where you're building your confidence, and it's like climbing up that mountain, isn't it, to Tony? Have you done any mountain climbing?
Not for a fairly long time. And the last time that's not true. The last time I climbed a mountain was actually not physically. It was in a one of those wonderful sky gondolas in Austria, going up to the top of the Austrian peaks. Yeah.
Sounds scrumptious, really, really lovely. And yeah, that's what we have to do.
It was breathtaking.
Yeah. Yes. And if we can't travel overseas at the moment, we've still got our own countries that we can travel within and get to know our own area and our own environment again, which is not such a bad thing, is it?
No, eventually we'll be able to travel again. Might be a little bit longer than we'd like, because I know I've had itchy feet this year. I would have been, you know, to Bali and Fiji and Melbourne and Sydney and anywhere else. But you and I had a trip planned to the US and Canada. None of that's been possible. So, but it's been a good year for sitting with yourself and working on things like your fears and working on your hopes and dreams and vision for the future, hasn't it?
It certainly has. And, you know, you can find negatives and positives in every single situation. COVID has taught the whole world to look for positives, hasn't
yes.
it? And it's something that we have to
do. I hope so.
Yeah. And it's something we needed to do. We really needed to do it. You could almost feel, before I left for Egypt in March, I had this sense that, you know, this sense that things were going to be good. And as you do, we all did. The world seemed to be running so fast. Everything was so fast. Every time I drove on a road, and I'm a long haul driver, every time I saw a major accident, a major tragedy, every single time. And it started getting to the point that we all needed a break. And
we
sort this out. And the world's had many of those breaks before. You know, the Spanish influenza and world wars, et cetera. We've had all those breaks before. So what we need to do is build up our resilience. I would like to just read for our listeners as well what I call a heroic prose that I wrote, and it's in the front of my book. So my book, I don't know if anyone has heard before, but it's called Fearless, Buckle Up, Build Resilience. So that book is a little beauty because it actually has a lot of information about it to help you if you do feel anxiety or fear or lack of confidence or self-awareness. But many, 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 many years ago, I read a heroic prose called Man in the Arena. And I don't know if you've heard. Yeah, Brené Brown.
It's one of my inspirational quotes.
It's very, very inspirational. So Theodore Roosevelt, who was a US president on the 23rd of April 1910, wrote Man in the Arena. And I often read it and I just loved it. But I came to a point one day when I was writing my book that I was looking for heroic prose written by women, without being sexist, but written by women, because this was in 1910 that Theodore Roosevelt wrote it. And I decided, I really couldn't find much, so I decided I'd do one myself and do it for them. Because my book's a bit of a legacy for our children. So I thought, I'm going to have a go. So I'm going to read that today. And this was inspired by Man in the Arena. And my heroic prose is called She Rises from the Fire. It's not the words of man that count. It's the words of women too. Not those who deceive and delight in the failure of others, never experiencing triumph or defeat. The praise belongs to the woman who fights the fire, rising burnt and scarred, refusing to fear her critics. The one who navigates floods, cliffs and roadblocks, facing corrupt, masked highwaymen at gunpoint. The woman who watches when they cut the rope of safety, smiling smugly as she plunges into the abyss. The tribute, in fact, belongs to the woman who feels the terror and trepidation of what's invisible around the corner, who suffers the pain when she gets it wrong, but has the strength to pursue because without effort there is no failure. She is the one who stands strong in turbulence, who struggles unaided making mistakes, who bravely travels alone. They are the fake ones, unmotivated, dishonest, claiming their glory from those with passion who do good deeds and have experienced the victory of great achievement. For she fears less and dares to challenge them all. Wow. I love writing that and I love reading it still. I really do love reading it still. And we're running out of time almost, Tony, and I'm watching the clock. So just very quickly, we had some quiz questions last week. What does HE stand for, the periodic table? And it's helium, hydrogen, helium, lithium, helium, boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, goes on. And the four ingredients to make a cosmopolitan cocktail: fresh lime juice, vodka, cranberry juice, and Cointreau. You might like to make yourself one of those. So to everyone, next week, who will I be inviting onto the show next week? We've got the wonderful Michelle Dewsbury, and Denise Whaling, and both are California ladies. And I met these ladies early in the year in Egypt, and we forged a very special partnership and alliance there. And we want to talk about it together. And it's called the Student Economic Forum. So that's what we're talking about next week on Thursday. So thanks for listening to another 60 minutes of inspiring talking points on Tracy Tully Talks, brought to you by bbsradio.com. Tune in every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, 5 p.m. PT time in America. Contact me via my website at www.bbsradio.com/Tracy Tully Talks, no E's. Scroll down to the bottom of the page and leave a message for me. If you're interested in lifting the profile, presence and profit of your business, we have affordable sponsorship opportunities available to you. So right now, everyone, until next Thursday, it's goodbye from me and Tony. Thanks for listening to another 60 minutes of inspiring talking points on Tracy Tully Talks, brought to you by bbsradio.com. Tune in every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, and 5 p.m. PT time in America. Leave me a message on my website at www.bbsradio.com/Tracy Tully Talks. If you're interested in lifting the profile, presence and profit of your business, sponsorship opportunities are available. Until next Thursday, it's goodbye from me.